You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. The government cares about
they
you.
Ain't giving up a second down. Thought about you. No. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
ghetto
me.
People.
People. You gotta take a look at yourself. Yeah. Ghetto people. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives,
this call may be recorded,
where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means, so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at Time for an Awakening.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well for you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today, this weekend, this still holiday weekend, Black Friday. And hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it is not and it has to get done, it must be done and it will get done because you will do it. That's right. You ain't going to procrastinate. You ain't going to put it off. You're going to get it done. And that's why we have much love and respect for you, because you're going to get it done. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com. and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. And other programming we have here on timeforanawakening.com is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, this program. But on Mondays from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey up in Cobra. And then on Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Tuesdays, the Black Reality Think Tank. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report on Wednesdays from 8 to 9 on Wednesdays. And then on Fridays, if it's Friday, it's 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays at 8 p.m. Saturday from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sunday, once again at 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black. Get everything you need from American African-owned business from WeBuyBlack.com, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. And I hope that today, on this Black Friday, you will shop with somebody who is Black. That's right. WeBuyBlack.com. Go there. I know you can go there on Cyber Monday, you know. It's Cyber Monday, right? So that's what it is, Cyber Monday, whatever. But also, too, you can go to the other vendors and other stores that are in your city, in your locales. You know, I know today is the opening, the grand opening of the new Black Wall Street Market in Stonecrest, which is east of Atlanta on I-20 East, exit, you know, Stonecrest or Pleasant Hill Road, make a right, go down, and before you see the Bojangles on the left, and make that right at that light there, before you even pass Bojangles, before you pass and you see it, make that right there, and then the sign will tell you the new Black Wall Street Market be on the left, which is a former Target, which are the Allen Enterprises, has it and made it into the new Black Wall Street. More on that in a minute. WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bomani Tayemba is in Tanzania as we are talking, and he'll be back on the 29th. So a few more days from now, and then his next trip will be December 24th to January 5th, 2022, going to Ghana, and then April 1st to April 11th, 2022, Senegal and Gambia, and then May 24th to June 5th to Ghana, and then November 17th through the 28th, 2022, back again to Tanzania. So he has it laid out for you, and you can take advantage of any one of these trips. Go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org, and everything you need is there for you to make a trip of a lifetime. All the information, all the forms, all the things are there. But if you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomonti. If you want to see videos, go to YouTube.com/Bomonti2007. And Habesha Incorporated.org. Habesha Incorporated.org. Brothers and sisters, they are doing the work. Go to Habesha Incorporated.org and see for yourself the great work they're doing with Habesha Works, Black Tar Roofs, Golden Growers, Sustainable Seeds, Urban Green Jobs, and of course the Kashi Project in Ghana. And their videos and pictures of the Kashi Project, how it's developing. Habesha Incorporated.org. The LEDGE program, brothers and sisters, the LEDGE stands for Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. And it deals with the four areas of human existence, which is food, water, clothing, and shelter. And they have 12 projects in six countries, and over 172 employed and over 260 members of the LEDGE group. Become a member of the LEDGE group. Can buy land in Tanzania for $250 an acre. Be a member of the LEDGE group. Bibi Atumi, A-B-I-B-I-T-U-M-I, BibiAtumi.com. BibiAtumi.com, brothers and sisters. Go to BibiAtumi.com and become a member. Get on that website and all the things that are available to you through BibiAtumi.com. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End on Ralph David Abernathy. Go to Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End on Ralph David Abernathy. Give them a call at 404-444-1635. That's 404-444-1635. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Mama Nia needs your support once again. This is so-called Black Friday, and I'm saying to you, not just this day, but every day, spend money with us. Support our businesses. Support one another. Give Mama Nia a call at 404-346-3263. 346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The other bookstore we promote is the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. Brother Gazem De Ajamu has a coffee bar. We're serving delicious Cameroon Boyo, which is my favorite. But he has books and all kinds of good stuff at his place at the Black Dog Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. Give him a call at 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Okay. Also, too, I still have that cart left from Afroletics. That brother has a store in the new Black Wall Street Market, along with Brother Sajifo and his business. He has two stores. He has art, beautiful artwork, of course, and then he has his jewelry store. So, and my brother Michael McGee Jr., Brother Mike Jr., he has a CBD store in the new Black Wall Street Market. Check him out. Today is the opening, the grand opening, but they'll be open from that point on, and they deserve to be supported. All right. The African Village in Macon, Georgia. The African Village in Macon, Georgia. Open from Tuesdays to Sunday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m.
your brother BJ a call at 478-256-1166. 478-256-1166. They'll definitely have what you're looking for, believe me. Okay. Us lifting us to Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Every Thursday night, their Thursday night broadcast is on Blog Talk Radio. BlogTalkRadio.com/Us Lifting Us. Put in BlogTalkRadio.com/ULU. Every Thursday night from 9 to 10. From 9 to 10. Us Lifting Us, their Thursday night broadcast. And if you want to call to listen, you can do that. Or if you want to call to give your questions, comments, or concerns, just dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Sun Goddess Scents. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia. Inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. If you need more information, give our good sister Shelly Amundset a call at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop. Sanjay-I-80, Sister Gabrielle Aurelia with her program in Haiti, in the northeastern portion of Haiti, opposite of where that earthquake happened. So they weren't too much affected by that, but they're doing great work with our children in areas of education, health care, sustainable agriculture, and entrepreneurship. So please check them out. Go to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I .org, Sanjay dash Haiti. And Akabin Institute, my good brother Baba Barudi and the lovely, lovely wife, Mama Inaya Barudi. They're educating our young warriors. Brothers and sisters, you know they deserve to be supported. Please go to PayPal or Cash App or just send a money order or check to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. Akabin Institute. Also, too, check out the books that Baba Barudi is author of at AkabinHouse.com. AkabinHouse.com. Check them out. All right, brothers and sisters. Had a little technical problem. Had to reboot. You know, sometimes you got to reboot, you know, to get going. And that's what happened. Had to reboot to get going. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Today is the 26th. My mother would have been 95 years old today. That's right. Tina Turner's birthday is today. She's, what is she, 80 what? Still looking good at 80-something. Tina Turner's birthday. Yeah. So. Yeah. To Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. November 25th. I align myself with the revolution, so I have to mention that I have no time for those who seem as if they came across the word revolutionary in the dictionary and decided, oh, for the moment, that sounds like a cool thing to be. A revolutionary state is beyond temporary. You need to wake your asses up and read our people's history. No more turning our heads from the truth so much until our necks get tired. No more sliding ass backwards down a slide into a puddle of lies until which we must drown in. No more blissful ignorance. No more shouting for justice with just a whisper. No, we can no longer be a bunch of empty heads living in critical times refusing to recognize real lies. Wow. Yeah. Jasira. Given the state of the African nation, Africans need identities which are extreme. Real, effective warriorhood calls for frontline minds and personalities which are knowledgeable and confidently aligned with the revolution. And and relative to that of our Negroes and lost souls. Being this requires what most would mythicitally misnomer extreme. However, it is not extreme. It is the warrior's norm to know who they are historically, and we are historically to know what they have done and continue to do to us and the world, and what we must do to stop and reverse this pathologically racist ma'afa. To remember how sleep is once you have awakened from dreams full of blissful ignorance is to correctly align oneself with the revolution in the most necessary extreme ways. Affirm, I align myself with the revolution. Affirm, I align myself with the revolution. November 26. Love makes your soul crawl out its hiding places. Love makes your soul, love makes your skull, love makes your soul crawl out from its hiding place. Zora Neale Hurston. Our women are our healers, and because of this divine quality, they are abused. In a reality where control over others and unrestrained emotional, physical, and verbal violence against others is an obvious indicator of that control, those who move with their hearts become the easiest and most desired victims for unself-confident predators. Especially often such domination is obsolete. Yorugu are the ultimate dominators, masters in the art of sadistic manipulation. Historically, in response to their acelic imperatives, they have made a cultural and social habit of ranking persons, personal prestige and power based on who most effectively dominates others among their group and others while remaining the least victimized and controlled. Being the most targeted by this violence, African women have tried to protect their souls by hiding their hearts behind shields of indifference. They are living lives of apathy and needlessness as they place an inordinate amount of energy into suppressing their femininity and the nurturing talents no one else possesses so well. Yet femininity is beauty, and beauty is hard to hide. Our women's essence as spiritual beings who exist to heal finds ways to reveal itself even in the darkest of evil places full of malevolent people who have no love of life. So even though they are physically the most beautiful to ever walk this earth, Ashe, their beauty is not the only reason Yoruguan males want to possess them. They want to own and control that healing power. African men must make this a non-option. We must give them the healing love they deserve and make them know that their immeasurable value. Make them know that they have their immeasurable value to us. Affirm, I have stopped hiding my love for Africans. Ashe, I have stopped hiding my love for Africans. That's what happened to me many, many years ago. I fell in love with Africa and Africans. November 27th. People without knowledge of their culture drift about like corks on an ocean. Timothy Callender. Whenever we see individuals who gain enormous ego gratification from creating chaos on the front line at every opportunity, we see individuals, often the same ones over and over again, most often doing absolutely nothing concrete for African people themselves, throwing innuendo, lies, and conspiratorial connections behind a keyboard into a social media looking for fights that will engage more people, improve its ratings, and distract warriors from the responsibilities to correct this evil and aggressive counterproductive reality. Whether conscious or not, these individuals are instigators, frantically creating chaos on a front line that already has enough destabilizing issues. In their historical ignorance, they would have us believe that they are simply messengers in a democratizing, question-everything process where revolution is an ongoing argument in the tradition of theses, antitheses, and finally, a synthesis. which leads to others' more progressive debates. But even if this were a democracy, that it is not really why they do what they do, and that is at their heart. They do it because of the indescribable joy that creating, fueling, and observing infighting brings them, an enormous sense of elevation that they get simply from being and bringing others down. Affirm, I am anchored in a deep knowledge of our culture. I am anchored in a deep knowledge of our culture. Brothers and sisters, the Enye Sesem of daily revolutionary thought. Yeah, the day is the day after Thanksgiving, Friday. Known today as Black Friday. But of course, that was not always the case. In fact, for those of us who are old enough, because some of us are young and maybe were just born, maybe, you know, 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. And that's when this word for the day after Thanksgiving became known. And we got to understand why it became known. You know, we already know how Thanksgiving came about and the lie that it was initially and the real meaning behind it. Not a day of celebration, day to be thankful, because you should be thankful every day. Not just at one particular day. I know it's a day that we all come to celebrate and bring family together. You know, I had a good time yesterday with my family that is here in Atlanta, and a cousin and his wife and son that came from Chicago, and that was great. You know, and all the things that happen, the games you play, the TV you watch, the movie you may watch, whatever. It's all beautiful and it's great. But one thing, you got to know the root of something. When did it begin? How did it begin? Why did it begin? And of course, the day of Thanksgiving is something that, and that's why, to me, you need to look at least go online and look at Dr. Ashaka Musa Barashango's book, Africans and European Holidays. We should not be celebrating. Y'all know that. But of course, we're here in America. And so when America has these holidays, and of course we're here in it, we celebrate just as hard as they do. Things that they bring into existence. Initially, that is something sinister, something evil. Because when they said, let's give thanks that we were able to massacre these people, to kill these people, and to take their land. That's what it was about initially. That's what happened initially. That's why for many indigenous people, it is not a day celebration. It is a day of mourning, a national day of mourning. Because the European would have you believe, Urugu would have you believe that a lot of this land was uninhabited. It was barren. And because of that, they had a right to come here and claim it. Because later, it just wasn't they left England or France or Spain or Portugal or whatever for religious freedom or for whatever reason. Same. I don't know what they do in Australia if they have a Thanksgiving in Australia, because I think that came so much later. And, of course, how Australia was taken is just really pathetic. You know, I'm not sure. But I mean, many times these Caucasians, they have a celebration from what they've done. They're not ashamed. They're not ashamed of conquest, of taking people's stuff, of eliminating human beings. They're not ashamed of it. It is who they are. It is what they do. It's the same with this Black Friday. Of course, for Europeans, they made the word black the most negative. In fact, look up Ossie Davis. The English language is my enemy. Look up other brothers and sisters like Muhammad Ali and many others who said about the word black. Martin Luther King. The word black, as it relates to this society, is something evil, something sinister, something negative. So you mean to tell me they're going to have a day that is, you know, we got to understand the origin of it. Now we now know that it comes out of the accounting. For those who are into accounting, they know that the word black is good. It's good. Because they're using black ink. And to highlight something that is negative, they put it in red. They put it in red. So the more things that are in black in the accounting is good. And final for that year, that fiscal year, you want to be in the black. You want to be in the black. And so the day after Thanksgiving, which is the start. Now, once again, going back to the Thanksgiving thing, you know, initially, Lincoln said the last Thursday. He said the last Thursday in November would be a day of Thanksgiving. Prior, every time the Caucasians had a victory over indigenous people by killing them or eliminating them, and they did all kinds of things to do that, if you remember. All kinds. I mean, they killed the, there's a picture, I don't know if you've ever seen it, maybe you probably have, you know, of a Caucasian standing on a mountain of buffalo bones because they had killed the buffalo. They slaughtered the buffalo, which was the main meat of the indigenous people, you know. And so it was always, you know, I mean, them giving them blankets with the disease in them, and they brought disease, you know. All of these things. And all of these things that they, you know, they ain't sorry for. They give no restitution to. They give some symbolism. They, you know. And so, after Lincoln said the last Friday, well, Roosevelt changed that because the capitalists, the merchants, the big stores, Macy's, Gimbel's, the big stores, the big department stores, they needed more time. So instead of the last Thursday, he made it the fourth Thursday of November. FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, FDR, the fourth Thursday. Because sometimes there'll be five, depending upon how the calendars go. But most time it is the last Thursday of the month. But sometimes it may be, you know, maybe November 30th or November 29th might be that Thursday. You know, never know. So the fourth Thursday, so you can make sure they have that extra week or extra shopping weekend days for shopping. And then the day after became Black Friday. Now, this didn't happen right away. This didn't happen. In fact, this didn't happen. I mean, if you're an older person like I am, you never heard of Black Friday up until, I'd say, the 80s, the 90s. Because the word black in the society is so evil. Things that are associated with black is not something that is something positive. Because in the counting, black is positive. red is negative. And the fact that they wanted these merchants to be in the black at the end of the year because of the beginning of the shopping season, Black Friday came into existence. Black Friday came into existence because they had to have it. It's just like everything else. Eventually, whatever they have to have, they'll bring it into existence. Because I maintain that even this holiday of Christmas, if in a capitalistic society, you have to have something on the par of a Christmas, of gift getting and gift getting. Damn the religious aspects. That's one thing. There, you know, and the fact that it is made up to begin with, the bottom line is that we have to create something where money moves. Money moves. Gifts are bought. Merchandise are bought. In the last 30, 40 years, you've seen Christmas, you've seen gifts that are thousands, tens of thousands of dollars being bought. Advertising for cars. Advertising for big items. It's not just a gift. It's not just a diamond or perfume or candy. No. Big gifts, big shopping. Once again, moving big money. You know, the real history of Black Friday. In fact, it's interesting because one of the things that happened the day after Christmas, you know, there was these big department stores and they had these big sales. They didn't call them Black Friday then, but they wanted to, you know, to make sure that, hey, come on out. And so in Philadelphia, oh man, Brother Ralph had called the other day talking about the murders. I'd seen an article on the amount of murders in Philadelphia, 500. Wow. Anyway, in Philadelphia, way back, the police department and the police officers could not get off. The traffic was terrible, and they called it a black. Because once again, black, the word black in the society has always been about something negative. In fact, my boy, Brother Research West, he hasn't called lately, but he was mentioning about where there's no documentation on it about a Black Friday when there was going to be a sale on us as a people. You know, it's going to be after Thanksgiving, if you have as a farmer or you as a plantation owner that you wanted to get rid of excess. So there was a sale. There is no documentation on that. But I mean, once again, what I'm saying is that it was negative, and because they can do whatever the hell they want to do, it is their language and they control it. I do know that what we do as a people, we have done some things with their language for our benefit. You know, some may argue by the so-called N-word, we have co-opted that word, and we made that word into a word that when we address each other as a word of affection towards one another, I always beg to differ, you know, because once again, I'm dealing with, I want to talk about the root of something, you know. You know, I know what you're saying. This is what it is right now. This is what we call it right now. But we got to deal with the root. The retail bonanza known as Black Friday is now an integral part of many Thanksgiving celebrations. But this holiday tradition has a darker root than you might imagine. Of course, the first recorded use of the term Black Friday was applied not to the post-Thanksgiving holiday shopping season, but to a financial crisis. especially in the crash of the U.S. gold market in 1869, two notoriously nefarious individuals. There were Wall Street financiers, Jay Gould and Jim Fisk, worked together to buy up as much as they could of the nation's gold, hoping to drive the prices sky high and then sell it for astonishing profits. You know, once again, everything is about greed. Remember, I've said it many times, what America's about. America is about individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. Individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. And if you think it's about something different, give me a call. Let me know. Or if you kind of agree with that. And, you know, I came up with that one like many, many years ago, just on observations, you know. On that Friday in September, the conspiracy finally unraveled, sending the stock market into a free fall, and bankruptcy was everywhere. Everyone from Wall Street barons to the farmers. The most commonly repeated story behind the Thanksgiving shopping-related Black Friday tradition links it to retailers. As the story goes, after an entire year of operating at a loss in the red, stores would supposedly earn a profit into the black on that day after Thanksgiving because shoppers blew so much money on discounted merchandise. Though it is true that retail companies used to record losses in the red and profits in the black when doing their accounting, this version of Black Friday origin is the officially sanctioned but inaccurate story behind the tradition. Yeah. In recent years, another myth has surfaced that gives a particularly ugly twist to the tradition, claiming that in the 1800s, Southern plantation owners would buy enslaved by our people as workers and discounted them on the day after Thanksgiving. Though this version of Black Friday roots has understandably led some to call for a boycott of the retail holiday. And it has no base in fact. There is no real history on that. Somebody threw that out there. And some people ran with it. The real history behind Black Friday, however, is not as sunny as retailers might have one believe. But back in the 1950s, police in the city of Philadelphia used the term to describe the chaos that ensued on the day after Thanksgiving when hordes of suburban shoppers and tourists flooded into the city in advance of the big Army-Navy game. Aha! In advance of the big Army-Navy game that is played, you know, where the president is always there and so forth. Back in the 50s, it was a big game. When they had the Army-Navy, it was a big game. You know, now it's, you know, they don't have any true, I mean, the Army or Navy hasn't been ranked in decades. But back then, they were ranked. Not only would Philly cops not be able to take the day off, but they would have to work extra long hours dealing with the additional crowds and traffic. Shoplifters would also take advantage of this bedlam in stores to make off with merchandise, adding to the law enforcement headaches. I see there were some folks in L.A. and in a few other cities, some of us, young dudes, going into big retailers and big high-end stores doing smash and grabs, you know, doing smash. In fact, I don't know, I think I read it said 90 people at a variety of stores. They came in there armed with hammers, armed with whatever pipes and so forth. They came in there quickly, smashed those showcases, grabbed whatever merchandise that they could. Some of them were electronic stores. Some were jewelry stores. Some were high-end, you know, like pocketbooks and so forth. Smash and grab. Yeah. Black Friday had caught on to Philadelphia to the extent that the city's merchants and boosters tried unsuccessfully to change it to Big Friday. They tried to call it Big Friday in order to remove the negative connotations. Black. You know, this society don't want black. You know, everything of you, just like they said, you know, if it's black, it's negative. The term didn't spread to the rest of the country until much later, however. And as recently as 1985, it wasn't in common use nationwide. Sometime in the late 1980s, however, retailers found a way to reinvent Black Friday and turn it into something that reflected positively rather than negatively on them and their consumers and their customers. The result was the red to black concept of the holiday mentioned earlier, and the notion that the day after Thanksgiving marked the occasion when American stores finally turned a profit. The Black Friday story stuck, and pretty soon the term's darkest roots in Philadelphia were largely forgotten. Since then, the one-day sales bonanza has morphed into a four-day event. They also spawned retail holidays such as Small Business Saturday, that's tomorrow, and Cyber Monday. Small business, the tomorrow's is the focus on small business, Cyber Monday, and Giving Tuesday. So it's four things now. So for you, after you spent your money, if you got some left, damn it, give to a charity that you feel is worthy. Okay? So it's Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday, and Giving Tuesday. Yep. Now the most dedicated shoppers can head right out after Thanksgiving meal and not feel bad about Black Friday. Yeah. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, brothers and sisters, give me a call. We can talk about anything you want to talk about. Want to talk about this? Any other thing you want to talk about? We got more conversations. Give me a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brothers and sisters, you are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Payback. The big payback.
That's where I live.
Oh, for the big.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. James Brown, the big payback. Yeah. In fact, watching the news, you know, it's the anniversary of Soul Train. 50 years. 50 years. I tell you, the 70s, man. You know, early 70s. And, you know, pretty soon coming to the middle of this decade, this one here, another anniversary of 50 years. So the middle 70s all the way into up to 80s was a very dynamic time. I think the problem for us is that coming out of the 60s, we believed that things were going to change and that we were bamboozled. We were. You know, we believe these crackers. We thought things were going to change in a way that was going to be substantive and fundamental, and, you know, but it didn't. And the reason why it didn't is because this is theirs, not ours. And so it gave the illusion, the appearance. And I know that there were a lot of jobs back in the 70s, and many of us took advantage of it. Many of us were able to, along with our families and along with wife and children, to move to other areas of the cities, their suburbs and so forth. You know, many of us took advantage of affirmative action in many occupations. You know, I'm blessed I did. You know, because honestly, do I really believe that I could have competed outright with all those Caucasians who came in with much better qualifications and education in a testing process that is proven and historically been proven to be biased? I don't think so, brothers and sisters. I know I'm an intelligent man to some degree. You know, I know ain't all that. That's for damn sure. But that's what happened. And that's what put us in that position. Many of the manual labor occupations that paid some good money, gone. You know, manufacturing took a big hit. And it seems that this Caucasian is always looking for ways to make money easier, to eliminate the ability for people to have good wage sustaining jobs. Just told you the other day why the economic situation is still the way that it is. Because in this economy, the people, you know, corporations and CEOs and upper management made millions. Managers were making hundreds of thousands. Upper management was making maybe even millions. CEOs is so out of whack, it's ridiculous. From an economic standpoint, just looking at this country alone, the economy is, as it relates to us and our wealth and theirs, we only make a tenth of what they have on average for Caucasians. That's why you can watch a sitcom like Married with Children and was Bundy. He could be a shoe salesman living in the suburbs with a wife at home that just keeps her hair combed and styled with a couple of children. That's the ideal. But for us, ours, I mean, yeah, I know we came along with the Bill Cosby, the Huxtables, you know, a wife that's an attorney, a husband that's a doctor, living in New York in a brownstone, money. But we also had good times, you know, coming up in the 70s. And so the reality for us, please join this conversation. Give us a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We can talk about whatever you want to talk about on this holiday time, you know, whatever it is on your mind. It's a Friday, you know, going into the holiday season. It starts the holiday season. And of course, you know, I'm going to really promote the Kwanzaa season upcoming. Because this is what we're supposed to do. That's what I believe I'm supposed to do on this platform, on this program, is to promote us. I firmly believe that this program is about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. That's why this program exists, because that's what we need to be. I'm not promoting voting. I'm not promoting, you know, going along to get along. I'm not promoting that. You know, I'm promoting Africa for Africans. I'm promoting the ideologies of Marcus Garvey, the philosophies of Marcus Garvey, the awakening of a Martin Luther King, the manhood of a El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, Malcolm X, the strength of a African queen, Frances Chris Welsing, Queen Mother Moore, African women that understood that, hey, I know my man acting whack, but there's a reason that he's acting whack. Because he's in an environment that's always under attack. Attacking his manhood. Attacking his mind. Attacking our mind, our family, our community. So, you know, this program is designed to bring this to our attention, but to also, you know, when people... Sometimes people ask about, well, what are the solutions? What are the solutions? We should be solution oriented instead of crises oriented. And I agree. But sometimes you don't want to hear what the solution is. You know, you ain't ready for this because you want a quick and easy. You know, you want what many of our people want is the ability to melt into this situation, to be accepted into this situation, to become a part of it. That's what we want. Because many of us believe this is just as much ours as it is theirs. So, you know, I don't want to be battling and fighting and, you know, no. I just want them to stop it and accept me and let me live. I don't give a damn how messed up Africa is. I don't care if other countries rip its resources off. I'm an American. I live in America. I've gone to school. I was born here. Me and my family have been here now since the 1600s. Some say 1619, the 1619 Project. And we've been here. We left like my family truly did, left Georgia. Not all of them, but a lot of them stayed. And I've met many of them in the last number of years, the last few decades, because I've been coming here for so many years. But many of us, like so many other of our people, escaping the tyrannies, escaping the intimidation and the lynchings and lack of opportunity in the South, to the discrimination and segregation and humiliation of the North. But there were so many jobs. You left the North and you came, you left the South and you came North. When you got here, there was a job. I was working in a foundry, and you know, factories and foundries, of course, are very dirty. But they're the backbone of what the machineries are about and what tools are about and what things are built and how they're built is about, you know. It's the foundry. It's some dirty work. I've worked in modern foundries. I worked in a foundry that was very primitive, so to speak, because I had to shovel the sand. You know, use the black sand where they poured, where they make a casting, where they make whatever it is they're going to make, by pouring metal into that casting to formulate whatever it is going to be, you know. And so they had the black sand instead of the ones I had worked previously in, where they were a hopper. You pull the rope or the metal thing and it opens up, it drops sand into a mold. You compress it. And sometimes there's a thing you put over to it, and then bam, you compress it and turn it over, put sand into that mold, and you know, shake it and press it, and then put a hole where you're supposed to put this hole at, so the metal can be poured into it. Put the sand, put the mold once it's done on a conveyor, and then the guy who has the ladle with all the molten metal in it, he comes and he pours it. One, two, pours it, you know. And then you wait a little while, and then you push them down this roll of conveyor, and then they shake out. They shake the sand off. The sand separates from, and then you have the casting. Then the casting cools, and then you go to where they take the castings off, you know, off where you put the metal at, and then they take those castings and those finished products to be polished and grind it, because you're going to got to get all that rust stuff off the grinder. I did everything in those factories. I did all of that work. I did all of that, poured, shake out, castings, grindings. Yeah. And it's real dirty work. Real dirty work. But they're gone. All those jobs are gone. All those jobs are gone. And so now, people who come here, some jobs just aren't there, and they're doing whatever they can do, you know? And the fact that wages for those kinds of minimal jobs have been stagnant, or they have been just non, they don't move. They're what they were at $7.50, $8 an hour. It's a damn shame. While the management continues to make big money. It is between what Caucasians, as I stated a minute ago, what they make and what we make is now over $100,000 difference. And it is said that it would take over 100 some years if the Caucasian's wages were frozen, that he couldn't get another raise. They were frozen, and ours were given a minimal increase, an increase, and that we had this increase, it would take 100 some years before our wages and their wages would be equal. That's why to me it'll never happen. It can never happen for us. But yet we continue to hold out hope. We continue to believe that this, you know, I know we have a mayoral election coming up. There's a lot of advertisement. I think there's a primary. Well, it was. Now the two people that I don't know when they when the election itself is happening, because to me, you know, they had advertisement out about it and so forth. I'm not really paying attention to it because I could care less about the elections that happen here, because to me, the elections that happen here, what changes fundamentally for us when they happen, after the election happens, and even if an American African is elected, what fundamentally happens for us? And I know that, and they say it all the time, that it is on a local level. It's on a local level that things change. You know, all politics are local, and it's on a local level where you select your alderperson, so your district people, where you select your mayor, that things can change. Well, I beg to differ in that, and I could care less about who's mayor, who's governor, who's senator. I know the brother Raphael Warnock won, and I know there's going to be some serious challenges when he's up next year for the seat that this other Caucasian who became ill had to give up. And this brother beat him out. I mean, he beat out, what's her name? He didn't beat out. The European Jew beat out one of the candidates. Because because usually that one senator runs and the other senator stays in, but they have both Senate seats up at the same time because of that situation. And Warnock beat the lady who was appointed, although Trump didn't want her. He wanted somebody else. But because she is very rich and was supportive of Trump, Trump was now glad that she was put in that position and, of course, supported her. But, you know, Brother Raphael Warnock beat her. And the Democrats won both seats. And the Democrats, along with the vice president, they didn't take into account Joe Manchin of West Virginia and how he behaves. And they didn't take into account Kirsten, whatever the hell her name is, Sinema of Arizona, and how she behaves. And so all the things that could happen for the Democrats, they aren't happening because those two don't give the votes to it, because the Republicans are not going to do it. These politics of this society suck. I hate them. I hate this system. Because it doesn't do what's best for the citizens. It does what's best for interests. And a lot of times the special interest is not for the good of the people, period. Particularly for those who have the least, who will be maintaining the least because of the system. Now, it's not going to be good, brothers and sisters. It's not. You know, you may think that it will be, but it's not. It is unfortunate. It is unfortunate. So. 215. Good afternoon.
Hey, good brother. How are you?
I'm doing well. How you doing this afternoon?
All right. This is ABCT.
Hey, what's up, my brother? How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm listening, brother. I'm listening to
good.
You. And I agree with you. And as you know, through my last conversation with you, I called the Democrats what they are, but I'm not a Republican either.
Right.
Exactly. These people that hold these offices have failed us. So what I do is when I vote, I write my name in until I find a viable candidate.
Okay.
And I even won a position last election, but I'm not going to take it because it'd be a waste of my time. Because some people don't even vote.
Right.
People don't even understand what they waste their time on listening to and following people, and they don't even do anything for themselves. They don't even speak for themselves. They let people speak for them.
Right.
And on the job situation, I agree with you. I myself have worked every job imaginable, the most dirtiest jobs there was. I needed to work because if I didn't, it would have kept me on the streets. And those jobs I learned a lot of skills from, and they all disappeared. But then they want us to think that there's jobs available where you'll only be working in a fast food place or something like that that's about to be replaced with robotics.
Right. Exactly.
Next year or two,
exactly.
It's going to be robotics.
Exactly. I'm telling you, I mail my bills because I want the people at the post office to have a job. I do a lot of things. I try my best. When I go to the store, I don't go to the kiosks to check out, self-checkout. I don't do that. There are more and more people and less jobs. That is a messed up equation. You know, when here they're talking about the driverless vehicles and driverless trucks. You know, with my friend who is a trucker, you know, and the fact that you, when you are truck driving, you can only drive for so many hours, you have to have a break. You can't drive straight through. You got to have a break. It's a demand. It's a law. And there's a log book that they had to show that you have taken this break. And so therefore you can't drive anymore until that time is up. But the driverless trucks, it can go from New York to Los Angeles and back and forth. And that's what they want.
And let me tell you something about that, my brother. Those machines, those Teslas, and all of those self-driven vehicles do not recognize emergency vehicles. They are killing more people running into cop cars and stopped vehicles than many, and they want to put more on the road. And the fact that I agree with you on the human equation when you do certain things, when you go and spend your money on different organizations. I'm pulling over for a minute. So when I go to these supermarkets and I go to all these places, I have an interaction with humans.
Mm-hmm.
And not only I show them, I have never wore a mask, okay, first of all, and I tell people about their health. I explain to them the stuff. I say, you do what you want to do. I don't tell people anything. But while I'm having a conversation, I buy each person something, a snack. The person says, no, I don't want anything. I said, well, you're a young person. You're not going to do this forever. I understand. I look at your face. I see the frustration that you have. This is just a stepping stone. Why don't you take this and bring it home to your mother and mm-hmm. make your mother smile?
Yeah.
And these interactions I have with people everywhere I go at a place, when I see these people and then they have a different look on their face, you see the life come back into them. And they ask me, why do I do these things? I said, because there's no more human interaction.
Right.
No one cares about anything anymore but themselves and fear. Fear is on the menu.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is fearful. You got to be scared of everything nowadays, so you can't even think.
Mm.
So the interaction with people, I think, is important, and they can add all of the self-driven vehicles, all the robotics that they want. If the audience would look up what Elon Musk just had a conversation about how they plan on intertwining AI with the human interface. And they're talking about how the machines are, we will be the people that will be sitting at home. If you ever watch the World Economic Forum meeting and they have a video on it, there will only be certain individuals that be at home working these machines. The machines, the roads are already being broken down into a small space. So there won't be any more vehicles. And when you brought up the thing about the vehicles it made me want to tell you that all vehicles now with this infrastructure bill, you will have to have a breathalyzer in your car.
Okay.
All vehicles.
Okay.
All
in order to start.
And so,
in order for that vehicle to start, you're going to have to blow into it. And if it proves that you're not inebriated or drunk, then you can go ahead and drive the vehicle. But if you're not, that vehicle will not drive.
And you'll have an icon pop up on your car.
Okay.
And it'll be a coffee. It'll be a coffee cup. This coffee cup is telling you you need to pull over. You've been driving for 3 hours. It'll even probably even tell that to you. And it's already, they're already monitoring your activities. And they want to monitor it so much because you watch, they're going to put a tax on your mileage by getting rid of the gas, which they're already doing, and putting everything on turbines, which you know it's not going to work too well. You can't switch that. And then we'll be on the grid that China runs. And the audience can look that up. China runs our grid. So if they control our grid and they're
trying to, wait a minute. China runs the electrical grid that is here in the United States?
Yep. They control our grid. That's correct. They control practically everything. There isn't a monument here that we own anymore. Everything has been sold.
That's true.
And see, it started in 1933. It started a little before that, but if anyone look up, are we the enemy of the United States? And that's when they took the gold from all Americans, and they have slowly turned everything against us. Now, I'm going to close on this because I know you have a show to do. I want everyone, when you watch these people on TV, I want you to look at the flag that they have behind them. A lot of people called me up because they didn't know what the flag were. There is a flag that America is supposed to fly when they're not at war, and it has gold fringes on it. And then there's the war flag that they have people pledge allegiance to. That is the war flag of America. They never fly the peace flag. But when they're lying to you and they're on TV right behind Joe Biden, I want everybody to open their eyes. I need everybody to wake up now. I want you to look at that flag and see the gold fringes. This is like the Mars movie. When the alien came and started killing everybody and they said, we come in peace, they repeated everything that the alien said, killing you. We come in peace. We come in peace. They're telling us a lot of lies coming after us with the peace flag up. Now, I'm going to close on that, my brother, and I look forward to hearing from you again.
Thank you, my brother. I appreciate it. You have a good weekend.
You too.
God All right. Bless. Peace. Man, appreciate that call. Bringing information. It is up to us, of course, to do the research. Do the research. When somebody says something to you, of course, even myself, anybody, do the research. Because sometimes the research will substantiate what you were told. And then sometimes it may not. But what does this sound like? Is it rational to you? Is it logical to you? In this society here, there's a lot of things that happen that is, some people are just not attuned. They don't want to be. They don't want to be. They don't want to know. You've heard that saying, right? If we knew better, we do better. If we knew better, we do better. Well, a lot of us don't want to know. Because by knowing, automatically, your behavior must change because you know. And you know that what you're talking about or what you're saying or what you're doing is not now in accordance to what you all, not what you have found out and what you know. Your behavior must change. But some people don't want to. They want to, waddle in ignorance. In bliss. They don't want to know. They don't want to be informed. They don't want to. You just like that one sister I'm talking about. She says, I don't want you to. I don't want to know. You're trying to mess with my mind. I want to believe this. I want to think that this is what it is. This is better for me. I don't want the truth. Just like. Just like Jack Nicholson's character in A Few Good Men, Colonel Nathan Jessup. You can't handle the truth. They can't. Europeans, Caucasians, Yoruba, the cracker, he can't handle the truth. And therefore, he continues to perpetuate the lies. 646, good afternoon. 646.
Hey, Oshie, what's happening? So I see you didn't get the itis, huh?
No, man, I sure didn't. I ate responsibly.
Hey, listen, your last caller, man, what he was saying is real interesting.
It is.
If you look at it, man.
Yeah, it is.
Because that whole situation with the trucker industry, they're trying to push that faster than they should be because there's just no drivers out there.
Well.
And, you know, like he said, it's dangerous, man. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for some reason, it looks like there's a lot of industries where the workforce is not what it was before the pandemic. So, you know, a lot of things is coming into question in regards to the inflation and things of that nature. Because I know, man, I done made a commitment, man. I'm not spending a dime this year on nothing. I mean, I'm just not going to do it because I want to see this thing fall. You know what I mean? And for me to try to bail out a system where they mistreat us, don't respect us, and things of that nature, it ain't happening, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just not. What's going on in this country, man, based on racism and white supremacy, man? You would think over 500 years, as the Negro Peen would say, things would get better. But the sad thing is, because we don't know history, we don't realize that it ain't never going to get better for us.
Right. It's not designed to. And it won't.
You know? It ain't never. It's not. Matter of fact, if the truth be told, it's not supposed to, oh.
Exactly.
It's not supposed to.
It's not.
Because it's like, if you don't understand that this saltine is your perpetual enemy, then you don't understand nothing, man. Yeah. And unfortunately for a lot of us, for some reason, we don't understand it, nor we wish to understand it. I mean, you know, man, it's really tragic in a sense, to whereas you get so offended about a white boy getting off who was supposedly the killer of people who were supposedly protesting for someone in your community that was killed.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, there was really not that many of us at that protest in the area where he did his thing anyway. So it could have been a whole different scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Then you turn around and you had the other case to where as they wanted to basically got away. But you know, white folks always got to show they dirt.
Right.
You know what I mean? They would have gotten away had that video wasn't there. That video, he kept that
exactly.
video, you know, for his
yeah.
trophy case.
Yep.
They'd have got away.
They would have got away because the Caucasian female district attorney is now going to be prosecuted because she was willing to let them get away. She was willing to bury that. But now she's going to be prosecuted, and rightfully so, you know.
And I hope she do some jail time.
Exactly, because she ate and bed in that situation.
Jail time for it.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, but then again, it may be a situation. I don't know if she's being prosecuted statewide or federally. If she's prosecuted federally, there's more of a chance of her getting off, but statewide, you know, they done met their quota as far as, you know, punishing crackers for killing, you know, an African.
Mm-hmm.
So she may walk and she may get off because they're going to have some sympathy for the devil. But the realization is the way the system is set up, if they just wasn't so stupid and just had to show their dastardly deeds to have the so-called community thank them, they wouldn't even be prosecuted.
Yeah.
I mean, and what's even deeper is the father was law enforcement, the son was a punk, and the other one was just a hang-alone.
Mm-hmm.
And now their whole lives are going to be under the awe of a little bit of payback and danger because of the simple fact they couldn't control their savagery.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't just leave the brother alone, let him go on about his business. They had to hunt the man down and do what they did to him. And they got busted for something that ain't even visibly be shown for, I think, more than a minute.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Right.
And on top of that, now right. I want to see if the feds want to make an example out of them. But if it was me, why waste the taxpayer money? They're already going to get life. The daddy and the other old man going to die in jail, and the son probably going to get murdered in jail. So, I mean, hey, I save the taxpayer's money. But here it is, now black people are so happy, and your boy Benjamin Crump that yeah. made him some more money.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much that Negro's made off of the suffering of black folks, and then somebody had the nerve to tell me, well, he's not white. He's not white. Never took a civil case to trial. Always settling cases.
Always settling.
Always getting yeah. one third. Mm-hmm. And the system never changes for black folks. It's never really yeah. exposed the wicked tree that's done. I mean, it really should be one case, just one case, where the family should say, no, we want to go to court and we want to expose the whole system for the evil that's been done to us so that the world can have an idea to see how they'll go and they'll do everything in their power to just do what they do. And if we don't get millions, we just don't get millions. But I guarantee you that Negro Ben Crump would never do it. Because I know a lawyer that would do it, Alton Maddox. Mm. And they basically destroyed Alton.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if you know Alton
yeah.
Maddox.
Oh, yeah, I know Alton Maddox. In fact, I met Alton Maddox.
Changed, okay.
Yeah.
Alton Maddox changed things in New York mm-hmm. in a way in which the legal system treated black people on a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
Him and Perm Daddy and others. And, you know, Alton was such a fighter, and he was such a brilliant lawyer that they had to basically disbar him on some BS, something okay. that had never anybody had ever been disbarred for.
Yeah, no. I met Alton Maddox, and
Trump is an ambulance chaser. And anybody who thinks that he's anything other than that is a joke.
Yeah. So, yeah, yeah. Well, there's a lot of cases that come up, so he's made millions.
Oh, he's made millions, yeah, man.
There's a lot of cases that
he's
come
made
up
millions
in his office.
I mean, just get, you know, a third of $10 million is three.
Right.
You know what right. I mean? Yeah, I mean, come on, man. I mean, the guy is getting paid off of the backs and the suffering. And what's so sad is the Negro couldn't articulate himself out of nothing.
Well, he's found his niche, you
yeah.
know, he's found his niche. And I mean, you know, the argument, just like you said a moment ago, that, well, Lisa's one of us, You know, he ain't the Jewish lawyer. He ain't the Caucasian, the European Jew lawyer or the Caucasian lawyer. You know, he's one of us. And just in that respect alone, hey, you know, same with Lee Merritt and same with all the other people who,
and you know something, this is the thing. Somebody really should investigate how much that he gives to the National Action Network with Perm Daddy.
Well, I'm quite sure he makes a
hell of a donation.
Yeah, I'm quite sure he does, because they seem to, you know, come together as a team lately, especially these last number of years with the cases that have gone on in New York, but of course where Al Sharpton is located in New York. And it seems that when some of these things that Al Sharpton has been comprised to, or people ask for his help, it seems that that's the lawyer he contacts, you know. So.
Oh, of course. And he used to, and before, and check this out. Before he would contact old Ben, there was a Jew who raped a black woman a couple of New Year's Eves ago that he would call on him.
Mm-hmm.
Sanford Rubenstein, his boy, a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
And after Sanford got caught up in the situation and he couldn't use that Jew no more, what did he go do? Go get the worthless Ben. I mean, we as a people, I think I'm coming to the conclusion that we as a people are just acceptance of our mistreatment by the white man because of our overall desire to want to be a part of whiteness. So whereby we just not going to do certain things. I'm just at that conclusion, bro. I mean, it ain't even, you know, if the truth be told, it ain't even worth fighting over no more, man. It's really not.
Well,
because we done came to the fact of acceptance. And when you get to that point of acceptance, there ain't really nothing you can do.
We keep holding out hope and praying and wishing and marching and so forth and, you know, boycotting and so forth, that all of these things will change for the better for us and our condition. And, you know, and there will be some equity in the society and some fairness within society, and that who we are as an individual will matter more so than who we are as being black or being African, as I like to say. And so, you know, I can have every right to go get this job as anybody else if I'm qualified to get it, you know. And if
it
I'm
don't
not
work like that,
of course it doesn't. But we want to believe that. We hope that that's what it would be, you see. And so we put our energy into making that happen because it's easier. It's easier than saying, F y'all, we're going to come together. We're going to do this. We're going to struggle to make something happen for ourselves and do things for ourselves and rely on one another, begin to trust one another, respect one another, believe in one another. Educate ourselves, educate our children. You know, this is harder. This is the struggle of life that we don't want, because we've been trained to believe that the European, the white man, his ice is colder. Is what he has is what you should desire. What he has is what you should want. You should want to be like him. And it's it reminds me of Charlie Brown. Charlie Brown wants to kick the football. Kicking the football is symbolic of the American society. And so what happens when Charlie Brown goes to kick the football? Exactly. They pull it away from
Lucy
him.
Lucy pull it up from under him all the time.
All the time.
I wonder if he's ever kicked the football.
that's a good one.
I stopped watching it,
yeah.
But I know it's been happening for years. I just wonder if he ever kicked the football.
Got a and chance you know to kick the at the can.
That's us.
Yeah.
That's us, unfortunately, yeah. as a people.
Yes.
Acting and responding in the same way, always yeah. trying to kick the football
and have
be acceptance of what the white man gives to us, and in the process, never moving forward in a form of separation to make ourselves happy and whole.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
It's just
really, really unfortunate because of the simple fact we're better than this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like this is something that we are as a people. No, we better than this, man. We know, and a lot of us know this.
Right.
But we just don't want to do for self. We always want to, I guess, be in a situation to have the white man do for us in our minds, which is, you know, if the truth be told, it's mind-boggling, man. I mean, it's not only is it mind-boggling, it's extremely frustrating
yeah.
because of the simple fact, if you continue to act and behave like that, you'll never be able to move forward as an African.
And
that's the most important thing.
And the other thing is that we fail to understand is that they have a desire and a design to eliminate us. To get rid of us. But we don't want to believe that. See? We don't want to believe that that is something that even humanly possible that you could even think about doing. But they do. And so because of our naivety and ignorance that we fall prey to them. And so, you know, because we continue to beg them and plead with them.
Yeah.
Respect us. You know, just like when they talk about this... This system works by its design. It is designed to work for them because it was created by them for that purpose. It doesn't work for us. And so when we go into court and we win a case, see, the system works. No, it doesn't. You know, the system doesn't work for us because it's not designed
to. It's not meant to work.
No.
It's not meant to work.
No.
For us at all.
At all.
You know, if the truth be told, it's meant to keep you in bondage.
Yes.
Because if you're free, then you have the right to be governments of yourself. You have the right to sovereignty. You have the right to do whatever you have to do.
No, but that's not the case. That will never be the case.
For you and your people.
Yeah, that will never be the case.
White man don't want that.
No, that will never be the case. And so, you know, for us... my contention is that we do not begin to wake up. And for those who don't want to wake up, y'all continue on. But for those of us who do, and we wake up and we say to hell with y'all, I'm tired of begging y'all. You have proven time and time again, no longer will I say any damn thing to you. I'm coming with me and my people. And we're going to do for ourselves. There was a period of time that we didn't ask you for a damn. We didn't ask you for sugar, honey, iced tea. And we did for ourselves. And that's what we're going to do again. Because to me, the only salvation for us is that, is doing for self. Closing ranks, pulling our resources, and doing for ourselves. Sovereignty cannot happen here. Because in this country, not even Caucasians who want to be sovereign, can that happen? This country is an oligarchy and run by big money and corporations. Not the voters, not the politicians. They're bought off. That you see that. I mean, a lot of this stuff is right in your face, Jay. It's right in your face.
Oh, no question.
You know?
Yeah.
It's plain
but
and simple.
You don't see it. Most people are too blind to see it because they don't want to deal with the reality of it.
Right, because it's frightening.
They live in a fantasy.
Yeah. Because it's frightening. It's scary. Because
that's how they keep you in control.
Yeah.
Because fear. They put fear into you.
Fear.
And nobody can say that they're not oblivious to fear. I mean, fear is a serious thing.
Yeah.
You know, and what happened is we as a people haven't got ourselves to be fearful with dealing with this cracker. We fear him even to this day. And I mean, it's based on the brutality of what he's done to us.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at some of the things, Oshi, that this white man did to our ancestors,
man,
if they were done today,
man,
it would just basically be a human uproar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The manners in which they brutalized us is insane.
It is.
I mean, if you look at some of the gadgets that they would put on African people.
Yeah.
I mean, even
their own people. Right. We're talking about Europeans, Caucasians, are the most violent prone people on this planet. They have murdered many of their own, but what they have done to people outside of them, they have murdered hundreds of millions of people. Hundreds of millions. They're very evil people. You know, and you know, when they talk about this critical race theory and you have Negroes talking about, I don't want little white kids to know, you know, how bad they... No, they need to know how evil and bad they are. And hopefully they'll change their damn ways and come in with respect to humanity, but I doubt it.
You know something, in all truthfulness, I agree with you on that point, but our kids need it more. Because you see, one of the biggest problems with black people is black people have no understanding or concept. And listen to what I'm saying to you. Of what culture is. And if we understood what culture was in all of the aspects of culture, we would be in a whole different place, brother. Because you got too many of our people who just don't understand what culture is. And because you don't understand what it is, you live a savage white man's life.
Yeah, because we live in an alien. We live in a culture... We live in a subculture of the European. This is not ours. This is not African culture. Because African culture is holistic. African culture is giving. African culture is understanding of how it happens mutually for all of us. This is not that culture. This is selfish, greedy, undermining, mean-spirited, evil. Yeah. This is what this is. But listen, Jay, I gotta go. I gotta go, man. So,
Well, I'm glad the itis didn't get you, brother.
I hear you. I hear you. Hey, Baba, 505 of then Albuquerque. How you doing?
Listen, man. Listening to you guys, I'm doing all right.
Well, I appreciate it. Well, thank you for hanging on.
Listen, listen, man. You know, I can't get nothing done in the morning, man. I mean, I'm pissed up. This is unbelievable. You guys do a show together. Just you and
well, basically, me and Jay done that because Jay's my often caller, and I really appreciate him doing it. You know,
and in fact, I don't know where you're in Manhattan or Brooklyn. I mean, that's a plus for me. You know,
no, I'm in Manhattan. I'm in Harlem, brother. I'm in the middle. Okay. I'm in the middle of so-called blackness, which is a farce.
It's just a farce. It's
funny. I was just talking to a dear friend of mine. We the only survivors when we came back from Germany in 1960. He called me yesterday because, you know, it was supposed to be Thanksgiving. And,
right.
He grew up on 114th Street and 7th Avenue. I think Melba's. He was telling me about Melba's restaurant. It's a Melba. Yeah. And, you know, we was kicking it for a while, but he said he can't get out of bed now because he's like 80. On that, 83. Uh-huh. He was a very good boxer back in the 60s. Bernie Watts. He was a middleweight. But anyway, to make a long story short, man, I mean, Ivan Van Sertima. I went to a lecture with Dr. Van Sertima back in the 70s up at the First World. And he said one thing that I never forgot. Somebody, they had a question and answer period. And a young lady, I think Van Sertima was teaching at Rutgers, and I think she was one of his students.
Yes.
She was in the audience, and she asked him a question about Africans in general in the diaspora. And he was trying to figure out some kind of way to address her question. And he said, let me think. He said, let's say it's a matter of colonization of the imagination. I got it on my wall.
Yeah.
I wrote it down, put it on my wall. Colonization. Now, I've never even thought about your imagination being colonized.
Yeah. Even your dreams.
He said, my daughter was born in 72, so it had to be around 73, 74.
Mm-hmm.
Colonization. And I just got up and left. I used to take all the lectures at First World. I just got up and left. There was nothing else to be said.
I hear
you. And I still walk around with that image of him trying to, you know, answer her question. He said, all I can come up with right now is colonization of the imagination. Well, that just blew me away.
Yeah. Because that's what they've done.
Is it Jay? His name is Jay?
Yeah, Jay.
The brother. I put all of what y'all have been saying, especially when Jay got on the line. And that just came right back to me, colonization of the imagination. All I can tell you, I get these Caucasians, Europeans, whatever they call them, I give them credit. These people have done their job, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can't deny that. My 80 years growing up and watching all the stuff that's going on in my house, in the park, in the club. I mean, they have done, I give them, they have, Frances Welsing said one time up at City College, she said, we playing checkers and they playing chess.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
That's what they
do. She said, I tell them to get Dr. Frances Welsing at City College. You had to get, when she used to come to City College, you had to get on the list months in advance because you're not getting in.
Mm.
And she came out there leathered down, leather skirt, leather coat. She was hooked up.
Yep.
You understand? She was a fly. She was a fly lady.
Oh, you know, yeah, man? No doubt. No doubt. Beautiful sister. A queen.
Classy. She got up on,
Classy African woman, man.
Yeah.
Oh, no. She was the bomb, man. But like I said, they, when she used to come to City College, there's just certain things. You can talk for 2 or 3 hours with me, but there's certain things when somebody say, after they said that, I don't have to hear nothing else.
Yeah. But listen,
guys. What you got to understand, I don't know what part of the lecture. She used to speak for like 2 hours, 2.5. Then she had an hour and a half of, you know, question and answer. But when she hit the, she said, what you got to understand, people, they playing chess. We playing checkers. I got up. I said, I don't have to hear nothing. I cut my tape recorder up. I went on hard.
I hear you. Well, listen, I got to go, brothers. Yeah, I appreciate it. Man. Yes, I do.
Take care of yourself and put this stuff in a book.
I hear you, Baba. I hear you. All right. Peace to you. Peace, Jay. Have a great weekend, brothers. All right. Peace to y'all.
You too, O.
Okay. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people has all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do it out, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodie. Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family. Have a good weekend. Be safe.